Hello, everybody, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash live, along with Inside Track buddy and co-host Jim Kelly, welcoming you to a special impeachment edition of Inside Track. As always, thank you so much for supporting our great Inside Track sponsors, Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, and Corazon Cabinets. These are great local businesses you should be doing business with. Talking about companies you should be doing business with, Corazon Cabinets is your locally owned source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets. Joy, Kelly, and Jennifer can help you design a dream kitchen or bath area. Corazon Cabinets carries J&K, Conestoga, and now Yorktown Cabinets. Come by and visit the showroom soon. See our displays on what your home will look like with Corazon Cabinets. We are one of the few suppliers of Yorktown Cabinets in Southern Arizona. Call 488-2266 and let them know you heard this ad on Inside Track to receive an additional 5% discount on Corazon's already low wholesale prices. You'll be amazed by the great styles and super, super low prices at Corazon Cabinets. Jim, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for stepping in for me when I'm not available during the summer. It's a pleasure to be working with you. How you doing?
I am great, Bruce. Thank you again for letting me share your time. It's been a long summer. But it's been a good summer.
You are a bright guy, and you have a much better radio voice than me.
It's just the way it is. I don't know how bright I am, but no.
I think anybody who knows who Jim Kelly is knows how bright you are. Hey, I had a very interesting day Thursday when the vice president came
to
visit.
That.
Yeah, along with GOP party officials Anna Henderson and Chris King. Wake up Tucson host Christy Simone. We served as drivers for the official party in the motorcade to the Caterpillar Proving Grounds where Mike Pence spoke in support of the USMCA. Christy described his driving experience speeding at 95 miles an hour along Valencia Road and down I-19, as well as he talked about our Secret Service friends, Mike and Mike, were quite a hoot on his show yesterday. I love being in a motorcade, and you would too. As I said to Chris during our mad dash, as we passed a good 50% of all the Tucson Police Department and a good chunk of the sheriff's office, they blocked off every intersection,
yep,
every curb cut, every entry onto Valencia. Now, if I was a smart cook or crook, I'm not a bad cook either. But if I was a smart crook, I would have used that cop manpower tie-up to pull a bank robbery or two, because there wasn't one cop watching the store because they were all watching the vice president, plus Chris and me speed down the road. It was very cool.
I do a lot of business down in Green Valley and Suarita and Rio Rico and Nogales these days, and I knew I was going to have to do my business on Wednesday because Thursday,
right,
it was going to be rough.
And wherever we went in Green Valley and Sarita, there were crowds along the highway cheering them on.
Sure.
You know, Trump 2020. It was very cool.
Sure.
Even cooler was being able to spend a few minutes talking to my friend Mike Pence, who told Governor Ducey that I had taken an interest in him when he was a backbencher from Indiana about 14 years ago. We've been friends ever since. Anna Henderson snapped some clicks. Now, I got that term from a Secret Service agent who said, hey, dudes, you know, come out of here in about 5 minutes. We're going to take some clicks. We had no idea what that was. We thought the guy knew Jim Click or something.
Right.
So when the VP initially saw me, as we always do, we man-braced.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I posted the pictures online on Facebook, and you'll never imagine who had a comment from the picture about my sexuality. Believe it or not, none other than resident lefty know-it-all and all-around agent provocateur from the Arizona Daily Star, Timothy Steller. His reaction on Facebook, which I think you'll find interesting and maybe humorous, look into Mr. Steller's psyche. Tim says, good thing you didn't get a normal embrace or people might have thought you're gay. Man braces clear up any doubt. I reply to him, I'm confident of who I am, and I don't care much what others might think. Stellar, but not confident enough for a normal embrace? I replied, I hug all my friends the same way, don't you? Fellow by the name of Gary Goldstein pipes in, okay, bro hug, let's not get too triggered. Next, we'll be worrying about preferred pronouns. Good, Gary's a smart guy. And then Timothy Steller, let's see down here, he says, that's not what I was saying. I'll spell it out for everyone. When a man says he's having a man brace, it suggests to me that he is too protective of his masculinity to simply call what it is an embrace. Now, I don't think Bruce is gay, but...
There's that however. I gotta love the way journalists do this stuff, man.
It's silly, Tim says, when men try to flex their masculinity at all turns, as many people do these days. It's the bogus alpha male trend. All of this shows the opposite of what is intended. If you flex your masculinity all the time, what are you really showing? Is fragility, not toughness. I'm sure I'm reading too much into Bruce's original comment to make a perfect example of this. Bruce doesn't flex like this a lot, at least that I know of. But that phenomena is really quite real and pervasive. I mean, it just goes on and on. Yeah. You know, now Dylan Smith, you know, gets involved and he says, Tim says, my apologies to Bruce if he and others took this comment as being an accusation or a hint about his sexuality. It was not. I was just teasing him about this whole issue of performing our masculinity, which happens to be a pet peeve and interest of mine. I don't know anybody who would make this into a pet peeve or interest, except for a guy like him. Anyway, hey, look, it's all good. It's just the way it is. When we return, George Bardmesser will join us. Later today, we'll also feature independent candidate for Mayor Ed Ackerley. He'll let us know about some obvious criminal activity focused against him and the Republican candidates in the city election. We have a great show for you today. Stay tuned to Inside Track. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. This is Bruce. Jim Kelly's right across from me, and joining us from the swamp is our guest for the next couple of segments, nationally known opinion writer George Bardmesser. George is frequently featured online for The Federalist and American Greatness. George practices law in the Washington, D.C. area. He's been a contributor to Inside Track in the past, and we're very pleased to welcome him back. George, you've been a writing wonder this past summer, and now with Russia, 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 a distant memory, all we hear about now is impeach, impeach, impeach. Have we gone mad or what?
Well, good to be with you again, Bruce. I think we are, but it's really just a continuation of the same story.
Yeah.
I mean, we have been hearing the impeachment story, the Trump impeachment story anyway, since early 2016, actually. Long before Trump was even the nominee, the Democrats were already strategizing and getting together and writing position papers about how they were going to impeach him. So this is just yet another battle in the endless war.
George,
not more, not less, but that's what we have. I mean, we will probably continue having these battles for the next 5 years, I would think.
George, I wanted to ask you a question. Do you think it would have mattered who, if a Republican won, do you think it would have mattered at all who it was? The Democrats would still be where they're at in their Trump derangement syndrome.
Well, if somebody like Mitt Romney had won, in other words, a graceful loser like Mitt Romney somehow won, it wouldn't matter as far as the rhetoric is concerned. I mean, if you recall, George Bush Jr., you know, was always pilloried as a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, or this, that, the other thing. Reagan was pilloried the same way. Yeah. So the rhetoric is really no different. Would they really go after somebody like Mitt Romney and try to impeach him? Probably not. The Trump derangement syndrome is a very serious affliction, yes. And I don't think a sort of a plain vanilla Republican would have triggered it. So Trump definitely has a way of triggering this affliction in his enemies, no question about that.
Well, George, I can attest to derangement syndrome on Trump, because I was at a presidential elector in the 16 election. I received over 75,000 emails. They crashed my server. I mean, it just was an unbelievable time in my life. So, George, in your American Greatness opinion piece, you tell the mythical story about Mike Pence's daughter, Charlotte, working for the Iranians. As much of a fantasy story that might be, it doesn't appear that not one Democrat official and hardly any members of the illegitimate press have given one crap about Joe Biden's drug-addicted ne'er-do-well son Hunter receiving a multi-million dollar deal to serve on the board of a Ukrainian oligarch's energy company with no discernible qualifications, except that he's the son of the vice president.
Right. Well, it actually gets even more interesting than that. The company at issue, Burisma, Burisma Holdings, there's a name you probably haven't heard. Most Americans haven't heard this. The name is Viktor Medvedchuk. He is the oligarch, the Ukrainian oligarch, whose daughter happens to be Putin's goddaughter. So Putin is the godfather of Medvedchuk's daughter. Okay? So Medvedchuk is... or one of his cronies founded this company essentially as a scam to get, you know, environmental licenses for gas drilling. Medvedchuk then took ownership of it. There were some other, you know, trials and tribulations there, which aren't all that relevant. And then, amazingly enough, this company is now paying Hunter Biden's company $3 million. Now, most normal people understand perfectly what is going on here. I mean, this is corruption. This is, you know, Biden is neck deep in corruption. And the money trail actually leads directly, if you trace it, from Biden to Putin. I mean, think about it. You know, a crony of Putin is paying Biden's son $3 million. As Biden would say, no joke. I mean, this is real. So if the roles were reversed, you would think that the Democrats, you can only imagine what the Democrats would do. I mean, they would be screaming. They'd be shrieking. They'd be howling. I mean, they'd be impeaching, night and day, morning and evening. But yet, we have Biden here, who is clearly corrupt. Everywhere he goes, there are some shady deals that his son is involved in just because his daddy is Joe Biden, amazingly enough. And yet the Democrats are somehow silent, strangely enough. This is, on the one hand, it's bizarre. On the other hand, maybe not, because the more we focus on this, the less we're going to focus on what exactly is the crime that Trump supposedly committed here.
So politicians lie. Some don't exactly lie, but they're vague to suit their needs. But why isn't there any concern, any intellectual curiosity about the big fat lie that Biden never talked about his son's board deal, especially after the facts have come out that he did in fact have that knowledge?
Well, the answer is because it distracts from the narrative that the Democrats want to tell. And the more they tell, or the more they want to tell that narrative that Trump did something wrong, although they can't quite articulate what exactly it is that he did wrong. I mean, what exactly is the crime that Trump did?
Well,
is it a crime to talk about something?
That's the question. How is any president going to carry out executive communications with other executive of other countries if you've got your party yelling and screaming at you over everything with no basis in fact? That's not making sense to me. The other thing, George, that's not making sense to me is the intelligence community's involvement in the politicization of all of this. It doesn't make sense to me that a CIA would set a criminal charge to the FBI for investigation. You know, why would the CIA do that? Why aren't they just collecting the information and giving it to the executives that are directed by the electeds? That's not making sense.
Because we think, you know, the CIA, there's a bunch of sort of Republican-leaning James Bonds in there doing whatever it is that James Bonds do. I mean, most of these people, you know, if you ever drive, like, on the GW Parkway there, you can't see the building, but it's not that far from it.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, there's about 20,000 bureaucrats there, and 85% of them don't do anything most of the time. I mean, on Monday, they discuss what they did over the weekend. You know, on Tuesday, they start planning their weekend. Most of the time, they don't do anything, and they're Democrats. I mean, don't make a mistake of thinking that just because it's the CIA, there's Republicans there. They're not Republicans. They're Democrats. So this is a very good opportunity to weaponize a process against a president whom they voted against. I mean, some are more motivated than others. This guy, whoever he is, apparently is more motivated than most. So with the connivance of Adam Schiff and the, I guess, the incompetence of the Trump-appointed inspector general, now we have the latest crisis. Now, I'm kind of, you know, remember, we've had these crises for the last 2.5 years. I mean, not a month goes by that we don't hear about the walls are closing in, you know, Trump is running out of rope, Trump is staring into the abyss, you know, the presidency is over. I mean, we hear this every 1 or 2 months is happening. So this is yet another episode. It's an interesting episode. Yeah, I mean, yet another angle how the Democrats are trying to get at him. But, again, the mistake is thinking that these bureaucrats at the CIA are any different than the bureaucrats at some other, you know, at the EPA, for example. They're not. It's the same crew. It's the same, you know, people who don't do anything most of the time, most of them anyway. C'est la vie.
So you write that the target of the left is Trump. But isn't Mr. Biden soon to be impeached himself as a viable Democrat nominee in 2020? And he's actually the one that's going to be crushed and not the president as the boomerang turns around on him, you know, old sleepy Uncle Joe, and maybe he's down for the count for good?
Biden, I'm guessing, is down for the count for good. I don't see him coming back. He's always been a weak candidate. And with this Bernie thing now kind of feeding into all this,
yeah.
Biden is not going to be the nominee, I'm guessing, simply because he just doesn't have it. He's not very bright, frankly. He's been lucky all his life, but he hasn't been very bright. So tossing Biden overboard is an acceptable sacrifice for Nancy Pelosi and company, because they already sense deep down inside that with Biden it ain't going to happen, so we need to try something else. So Biden as a sacrificial lamb in all this is fine. Now, with the interesting thing with Bernie now, of course, you know, we have news on that too. You know, Bernie had a heart attack. Okay,
right.
He had 2 stents implanted in it. It so happens I know a lot about stents because as a young patent lawyer, I was involved in a gigantic litigation involving, you know, stent patents. So I know all about stents. And let me tell you, 2 stents in your coronary arteries is bad news. Okay? I mean, 1 stent is bad news. But 2 stents is really bad news.
Well, he's 78, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, how much longer was he going to have anyway? I don't wish him any ill, but I mean, you know, this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. Basically, I mean, here's what happens. So this is what's going on in Bernie's arteries there, okay? There's something called plaque that forms inside the coronary arteries. I mean, the coronary arteries are the ones that take the oxygenated blood back to the heart for the muscles, because the heart is basically one big muscle, right? So it needs a lot of oxygen to keep pumping. So the coronary arteries, if there's plaque formed inside there, they kind of start tightening up and closing up, and there's less blood flowing through them. And that's bad news, because the heart needs the blood.
Does that explain some of his thinking?
I don't know. It could be. Now, there's more than that, okay? There's something called thrombosis, which is blood clots formed kind of statically where that plaque is.
Right.
And then there's also emboluses, or emboli, if you like, which is blood clots that float. Okay, so they're not like tied to one place. They kind of float down until they get stuck somewhere, and that's really bad news. So that's Bernie, okay? So he had a heart attack. They had 2 stents shoved into his arteries. This is bad news for Bernie, okay? Now, he's in good spirits, supposedly, but despite those good spirits, he's not campaigning anymore, or at least until October 15th. We'll see if they manage to wheel him out. Now, there's one thing that really upsets me in all this. It's not Bernie's health. It's the fact that Bernie chose to be treated at an American hospital. Now, Bernie is a huge fan of the Cuban and the Venezuelan healthcare systems. Okay? I mean, he hates America. He hates American healthcare system. But he really loves Cuba and Venezuela and what they have done. I mean, Venezuela has done everything, literally everything, that Bernie has always asked for. Okay? So their healthcare system right now is about equivalent to the healthcare system as it was in Europe in the 1400s. Okay? But the point is, why is he here? Why doesn't he go to Venezuela to get treated? Why doesn't he go to Havana to get treated, or Caracas, or what have you, or Medellin or something? Well, where's Medellin, Venezuela or Colombia?
Colombia.
Okay, forget Medellin, okay? I'm confusing my countries, okay? Caracas, I mean, why is he here? I mean, it's just unfair. I mean, he should really demonstrate his commitment to his socialist principles and go to Venezuela for treatment. But aside from that, let's imagine a situation where Bernie is unable to stay vertical, okay, and has to drop out. Biden craters, okay, so that means that between him and Bernie, there's now 50% of the Democratic voters up for grabs.
That's true. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Elizabeth Warren. Where do you think they're going to fall in amongst all of this?
Well, Warren, with Bernie, being shaky, to put it mildly, with Bernie's heart sending out an SOS, I mean, things are not looking good for Bernie, right? So with Bernie being shaky, this really puts Warren as the front runner in the race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you take her roughly 20-25%, and add Bernie's 15%, because you know that his voters are not going to go to Biden, obviously.
Right.
No.
Right?
No.
So she's probably the primary beneficiary of those voters. So she's now at 40%. Biden is in the low 20s, probably, and sinking. She is the undisputed front runner. Okay? But if Biden also drops out, the field is wide open now. This is very exciting. I mean, I think that this is a moment for Hillary. This is the moment for Hillary to stand up and say, America, your sweetheart is back.
All right, on that note, George and Jim, I want to come back to that thought. Hold that thought, George and Jim and listeners. We will be right back after we hear some commercials. You're listening to Inside Track. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Inside Track. Jim and I are here with Jordan Bardmesser, and we're talking about the heroine, that's not drug, the heroine of the Democratic Party, the Democratic Socialist Party. Hillary Clinton may be trying to use the Biden failure and the Bernie heart failure to weasel her way back into the 2020 nomination race. George, spin your conspiracy. I'm all ears. I actually have been thinking not about her, but about Michelle Obama as being the heroine of the party. I want to know why you think Hillary's going to be that person.
Well, I haven't really thought about Michelle Obama because Michelle Obama has said many times that she's not interested.
They all do.
That's true. They all say that. But taking her at her word, and we don't know that Michelle Obama is any good at retail politics. It's one thing to be a first lady where you get to choose where you go, what you say, where you don't go. It's another thing to be a politician. I mean, as Hillary found out, and I think Michelle Obama knows this, Hillary was relatively popular as a first lady. As a candidate, she was not exactly popular. So it's probably an object lesson for Michelle Obama as she's thinking about all this. But Hillary's different. I mean, Hillary, there's nothing to... Hillary has been sending out some smoke signals lately.
Right.
She's doing this book tour. She's making wild statements about why she lost. I mean, this time it was voter suppression in Wisconsin, of all places, is why she lost.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So the list of reasons why she lost is getting longer and is getting longer and longer, even though it's been now, 3 years since the election. But, she can't stop. So she's sending out some smoke signals that, she is ready. But so going back to our scenario, let's say that Biden craters, or the weight of the allegations of all this, the man is literally neck deep in corruption. I mean, seriously, he plays this, role of Uncle Joe or Grandpa Joe or something, the crazy uncle in the attic. But he is a corrupt Pole. That's what he is. Okay, his family has been profiteering from his, vice presidential role. I mean, it's just pathetic. And people haven't focused on this really up until now, because who the hell is Biden? Who cares about Biden? But if he's going to be the anointed front runner, people start caring. Okay, and the more the news penetrates the public consciousness, the less credible Biden is as a front runner. So he's already not really a front runner at this point.
Setting aside,
so let's imagine he craters. Okay, Bernie isn't there anymore. Biden isn't there anymore. Not that he's there now, but he's really not there at all. But he's no longer a serious contender. So we've got 50% of the Democratic Party, a lot of it on the, let's call it the moderate end, you know, in quotes, but let's call it the moderate end. That's
if there is such
where
a thing.
Hillary fits in.
Yeah, George, you talked about Joe Biden being a corrupt political. What if we set aside the Ukraine alone? What other things would be popping up if he continued to be the front runner?
Well, for example, the China issue. So he goes to China. He takes his son along. He's got meetings with the Chinese officials. Meanwhile, amazingly enough, his son has meetings with somebody there, and suddenly there's Chinese investment money flowing to his company, even though he has never been to China. He has never done business with China. In other words, there's absolutely no reason why it would go to him except for his dad is in town doing official business. So there's more examples. His brother, James Biden, is involved in some strange, bizarre, scam, scheme, whatever the hell it is, involving insurance and cancer and the Biden Cancer Initiative, which has not cured any cancer despite right. spending a lot of money. So if you start digging into Biden, and I'm sure the Republicans will start digging if he's...
They already have.
There's plenty to say. So this avuncular, image of Biden is not going to survive, and it probably will not survive long before we get to the nomination.
George, I want to go back. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to go back to the phone call that the president had with the Ukrainian president. Why shouldn't the president have been able to ask the Ukrainians or anybody else in the world to cooperate in what turns out to be the real investigation to figure out who actually did collude to rig the 2016 election, especially since such collaboration, criminal investigation collaboration is customary between governments, and it's also covered by international treaty. I mean, what is the big damn deal about this conversation, and for that matter, the conversation that apparently the president has had subsequently with Chinese officials? What's the big deal?
It is a mystery, and I suspect it is a mystery to Republicans, which is why Republicans aren't getting on board this train. Trump, as the head of the executive branch, has a responsibility to investigate corruption, and if that corruption has a nexus with a foreign country, it is perfectly logical and reasonable to ask for assistance from them. Why this is an issue is it's weird, it's bizarre. And this is why a lot of people can't quite comprehend what exactly did Trump do wrong in all this. I mean, what is the crime here?
Yeah, it's real. It's real fuzzy. There's not a kind of a clear criminal claim, but the Democrats are just calling this everything but anything but right. Hey, George, we have a quick comment and a question maybe from Greg. Mm-hmm. Greg, go ahead. You're on with George Bardmesser.
Thank you, Bruce. George, you used the expression a little bit ago about distracting narrative, and it immediately brought to mind when Cheryl Atkinson. Atkinson was a reporter with CBS, a producer, writer, under the Obama administration. What she wrote about the Obama White House wasn't friendly to Obama, and President Obama had his intelligence folks get into her computer remotely, delete files, and she's suing the Justice Department. I think the suit's ongoing. All the while, when President Trump was saying there's nothing to this Russian collaboration, of course he was right, what gets me is even after he was clear, that investigation was handled. Forgive me, Bruce, what was the name of the... Was it the attorney general that at the end of the investigation said there's nothing there?
Who
was
Barr?
The guy that handled it?
Rosenstein or Barr?
Yeah, Barr.
Okay. Even after that, Democrats said, no, they're mistaken. We're still looking. And all the while, I take my hat off to President Trump because, he's letting this stuff... it bothers him, of course. But he's still doing his job, and I don't see any possibility that they have anybody that could stand against him in a reelection bid. Now, Biden's been referred to as statesman like. Well, he's polished. He's been a politician all his life, and he's very polished. But with the new stuff coming down, Warren doesn't have a chance. Maybe the gay mayor from South Bend might be their front runner.
I don't see Mayor Pete, to be honest, as the nominee. It just doesn't mesh. I'm sorry. I don't see that. Biden, I don't, at this point, conventional wisdom that Biden is not going to be the nominee. So Warren looks like it. The Democratic establishment is slowly making peace with the idea. Now, as far as what you said earlier about you know, Cheryl Atkinson and all that, I mean, clearly the press is in the tank for any Democrat that they think they can defeat Trump.
ABT, anybody but Trump.
They will not investigate any Obama wrongdoing. It doesn't matter what comes across their desk. I mean, it's all part of the same cabal, really, between the Democrats in Congress and the Democrats and socialists in the press. I mean, it's hard to read these days. I mean, I'm old enough, you know, I'm 54, so I'm old enough to remember when newspapers were actually newspapers and not sort of propaganda sheets for the Democrats. Yes, the New York Times was left-leaning and the Washington Post was left-leaning, but at least you could look at the stories and get news from them. Whereas today, you read the stories, I mean, forget the opinion pages, but you read the stories and there's no news there, it's just opinion.
It's opinion. The entire newspapers are opinion.
Yeah.
And all of this Ukrainian business, George, it's really not about a crime, is it? They failed on the Electoral College.
They haven't articulated a crime yet. I mean, we've been at it now for, 2 weeks now, okay? 2 weeks, and there's still no crime articulated aside from some vague, you know, nebulous abuse of power or campaign finance violations. I mean, I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm not a campaign finance lawyer, but I'm a lawyer, and I'm having a difficult time grasping what exactly is the crime here. Okay. Whereas in the Biden case, I don't need to be a lawyer to grasp that issue.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty clear what the crime is there. I mean, here it is difficult to grasp just what exactly is the crime. That's now you can argue maybe he should have said it, maybe he shouldn't have said it, maybe he should have said it differently, maybe he should have brought up this. But these are all.
These are style points. They're not criminal indictment kind
exactly,
of facts.
Exactly. So now, incidentally, I want to make one additional point here. There is apparently the popularity of impeachment has risen in the last 2 weeks, or at least according to the press. However, there's a big however there. If you look at Trump's numbers actually haven't changed. So
Georgie raised $14 million the day that she announced the informal impeachment inquiry. He raised $14 million bucks, and the fundraising has gone up considerably ever since that happened for him.
Right. So in other words, Trump's popularity or Trump's ratings haven't really changed. Okay. Now there's certainly more enthusiasm among Republicans. Okay. But generally, his numbers haven't changed. At the same time, if you believe, you know, some of these polls, impeachment's popularity has gone up by, I don't know, maybe 10 points or some such. There's definitely been a bump in that. But the problem is those two stories aren't consistent with each other. I mean, presumably, if impeachment is 10% more popular than it was, 2 weeks ago, how can Trump's numbers stay identical?
Well,
that's inconsistent.
The only visible support for increased popularity for impeachment comes from dead enders like Mitt Romney and Judge Napolitano, who seem to have a beef with the president because in the case of Romney, he wasn't nominated a Secretary of State, and Napolitano because he didn't get the federal judgeship that he had hoped for.
Right. Well, it's a good thing that Trump didn't appoint him. He obviously didn't deserve it. Yeah. So now if you look at some of these polls, like, for example, Quinnipiac was one of the first pollsters to see this 10% bump in the popularity. Now, Quinnipiac is
we're talking 10% from where, George?
Sorry?
With that 10% bump from where? Not from 50 to 60?
From 17 to 30.
17 to 30. Because 60% of the people are against impeachment, right? Isn't that where we're at right about now?
Quinnipiac numbers are, their latest is 47-47.
Oh,
whereas before it was like in the high 30s 4 versus close to 60% against, or something like that. So their latest numbers post all this brouhaha are 47-47. Now, however, Quinnipiac, as I've said, is a notoriously, you know, laughably pro-democratic pollster. I mean, for example, they polled Florida. Remember when Trump had his campaign opening rally back in, I think it was June, in Orlando. Right at that time, I mean, it was like a blowout rally. Okay, right at that time, according to Quinnipiac, Biden would defeat Trump by 9 points in Florida. I mean, this is obviously silly. No one ever defeats anybody by 9 points in Florida. Florida is won or lost by very, very narrow margins. Like, remember the last election in 2018 where the Republicans, you know, Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis, they won by a fraction of a percent.
Right.
Okay, so now they're not Trump. Trump is probably more popular than they are. So if he were running, so if you kind of adjust these numbers back to reality, it doesn't seem like much of a bump. I mean, similarly, like there was a poll I looked at from Reuters where, I mean, their numbers also went up. But then, you know, like if you really dig into the methodology, you see that they're sampling all adults, for example, as opposed to likely voters.
Hey, George.
So in other words, when somebody tells you some number, just by itself, it means nothing. It's like if you go somewhere and I tell you, you know, Trump has a popularity of 30%. Is that good or bad? It means nothing until I tell you that this poll was actually taken in Berkeley, California. I mean, now, 30% for Trump in Berkeley, California is spectacularly popular. Okay? So, you know, if you hear some pollster saying, I got X, Y, you know, for Trump or impeachment, by itself, it doesn't mean a whole lot until you actually dig in. You probably need to, if you know that it's a sort of left-leaning pollster, you need to adjust for that. You need to adjust for who they're sampling. You know, is it all adults? Is it registered voters? Is it likely voters? Are they oversampling Democrats, which is a very common issue?
Hey, George, we gotta leave it there. We're up against a hard break.
Okay.
Thanks very much for coming on the show. You're
a
welcome guest here anytime. Friends, remember that the Democrat Socialists aren't trying to hurt the president. They're really using the president to hurt all of us who voted for him. Stay tuned, and when we return, mayoral candidate Ed Ackerley will join us and talk about the Democrat dirty tricks in the Tucson City election. Inside Track will be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash and Jim Kelly here. Our guest for the remainder of the show today is independent mayoral candidate for City of Tucson, Ed Ackerley. Ed, you have been making news this week in a most unlikely sort of a way. What is up with these Democrat dirty tricks tearing down your signs all over town?
Well, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. We've been putting up signs. We go back a day or two later, and they're down. And what we were asked if that we thought we were being targeted. And, you know, when only my sign is the one that is down and the other signs are still standing, it does tell you something, that someone is obviously somebody or some people or some organization is obviously looking for my purple and white signs and taking them down. So we had an incident last Wednesday where an individual was caught on video taking down my signs, and it looks like in the video a couple of the Republican signs as well. So we followed through on it and made a report, and we had a press conference on Friday about it as well.
Why is it, Ed? Why is it, you know, they have a 6-0 majority, super majority at the city council? Okay, they have a Democrat mayor. Okay, they've got control of every part of the city. Okay, why is it that even with all of that, these guys are so crooked and so evil that they would go and tear down your signs? I mean, does that say that maybe there's more of a chance you might win than what popular opinion is around town? What leads somebody to do something like this?
I do think you're on to something. There would be no reason to take down my signs if I wasn't perceived as a threat. And so there is this sense that If someone has to go to the extent of, you know, walking to a corner and grabbing my signs and doing it in a couple of places and doing it all over town, whether it be one person, a group of people, an organization, why? The question just has to be why. There obviously is a reason behind that. And if I'm perceived that my signs are perceived to be a threat to somebody, that they need to come down, that's pretty interesting. Well, and in some cases that, you know, and some people would say that bodes well for me, that that I'm moving and quietly moving up on the finish line here, and that's a good thing for me. But yeah, it is a little disheartening, but it is obvious that my signs are the ones that are being taken down because the other signs are remaining up. So it's not someone cleaning the street corner or trying to get rid of all signs. Our signs have disappeared all over Tucson.
Let me ask you a question. Has it been targeted in certain precincts or certain areas where there's a higher propensity for Democrat votes than there is, say, for independent?
No. We're looking all across the entire city. We're down about 30%. But for every 10 signs we put up, three or four were taken and or disappear. They disappear. They're not like they're laying on their side on the street or anything. They're gone. We can't find them. They're nowhere to be found. And so, but after this, all the news that happened this week, we've been checking this morning and, the signs that we've kind of maybe put a stop to it, at least for a little while, because our signs that we have put up are still there. But we're going to be very diligent on this, and certainly we're working with TPD because we have video evidence now. We're going to go ahead and prosecute, work with the city prosecutor's office to file charges and move forward, because this is not right. This is not right. I have every right to have my signs on the city streets, and there shouldn't be anybody that thinks that they have the right to take those down.
So, Ed, I've combined your candidacy really with the no on 205, the Sanctuary City proposition. I mean, they are so nervous. Okay, because if there's a groundswell of support against sanctuary cities, I don't care that Ms. Romero or the rest of the city council says that they're not for a sanctuary city. We all know what's going to happen, okay? We cannot have sanctuary city. And those people who are coming out to vote against sanctuary city, I don't think they're voting for Regina Romero, do you?
Oh, absolutely not. And, of course, Representative Grijalva said on your radio station not too long ago that not only is he for the initiative, he is for sanctuary cities. And of course, that would you connect the dots. And certainly there's a lot of people that would love to have Tucson labeled as a sanctuary city. And that is not in the best interest of Tucson. The initiative is a terrible written document that should not be passed. But even more importantly, the whole political concept of a sanctuary city in this day and age just flies in the face of what Tucson is and what we should be doing as a community. And it is not in our best interest. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we don't label ourselves something that would really hurt us, in a lot of ways, but really economically, it would just kill us.
Well, the shared state revenues, for one, would absolutely cripple this city, and leave the city in a lurch, in a budget lurch that would be impossible. This is going to end up in lawsuits for the next several years if it does pass. But I really do think that if there are enough people who don't like the idea of socialist cities, of sanctuary, as a Freudian slip, I'm sorry. If they don't like the idea of sanctuary city for Tucson, that kind of a designation, they're going to vote for the person who really has been vocal and against it. And that's not Ms. Romero, it's you, because she has all kinds of qualifiers. I've heard her on the Bill Buckmaster show, and she put qualifiers with respect to sanctuary cities. You're not. You're saying, no, this is a bad idea for Tucson, and it shows diametrically the difference in outlook that you have and Ms. Romero have in running this city.
Yes, I am opposed to the initiative as written and hope the voters will not make that something that we have to deal with. But even more importantly, I am absolutely opposed in the future of calling Tucson a sanctuary city. It just is not going to help us. And ironically, it's not going to help the people that the writers of the initiative and the supporters of sanctuary think it's going to help. if you take 10% of your budget and wipe it away, that's the discretionary fund that we can use to help these people in the first place. So it just doesn't make any sense, and it is a bad, bad, bad idea for the city of Tucson.
And let's point out also, you've been a lifelong Democrat. Okay, it's you're not a Republican masquerading in an independence cloth. Okay, I mean, you've been a lifelong Democrat, and you know, truthfully, I mean, you know, because I believe that clarity is very important here. There are some things that you believe that I, as a Republican, I mean, I'm a little queasy about. Okay, your style of leadership, your honesty, your openness, your business background, your ability to work with others and have a lot of relationships all through this city, I think are tremendously important. There is already talk of brain power leaving city of Tucson if she's elected.
Right. And I just have to clarify, you know, I'm a JFK Blue Dog Democrat. I am one that support my country, be patriotic. A lot of the values that the Republican Party espouses now are the things that when I was a young kid, that's what the Democratic Party stood for. And as you know, we're a lot further left and progressive in our country with the Democrats, and the Republicans tend to be a little bit more mainstream than even you know, back in the day when JFK was in there. So and I do think that, you know, we have to look at the skill set and what I bring to the table in terms of leadership, and what that juxtaposes to what the opponents, you know, the Green Party candidate, Mr. Cease, is even further left on sanctuary cities than the Democrat is. And so,
Ed,
you know,
we're gonna have to leave it clear.
I'm the guy.
We're gonna have to leave it right there. We're coming up at the end of the show. Friends, please support Ed and continue to support all of our great Inside Track customers. Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Corazon Cabinets, and Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. These are great locally owned companies that you should be doing business with. Until next week for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash.
Jim Kelly.
Wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon and a Los Angeles Dodger victory tomorrow when they play the Washington Nationals. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll talk.